Hello, on this week's program, a conversation with organist Paul Jacobs, who performs at the Kimmel Center's Verizon Hall this afternoon. We listen to a compilation of Notes from the Road reports filed by Susan Lewis on the China leg of the Philadelphia Orchestra's Asia Tour. The Philadelphia Inquirer's David Patrick Stearns takes us to rural China to witness performances by Philadelphia Orchestra musicians for survivors of the 2008 Sichuan earthquake. And we listen again to an interview with Nellie Berman. The grand final of a competition for young classical musicians she created takes place this afternoon. That's all ahead this morning, creatively speaking.
Support for Creatively Speaking comes from the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts and the listeners of WRTI.
Paul Jacobs is a phenomenon in the organ world. Now in his early 30s, the chairman of the organ department of the Juilliard School has been garnering national and international attention for more than a decade for his great musicality, his virtuosic technique, and his incredible stamina. Jacobs made history in 2000 when he played all of Bach's organ music in an 18-hour marathon concert in Pittsburgh on the 250th anniversary of the death of the composer. He has performed on five continents and in November reached a significant geographical milestone. A performance in Anchorage, Alaska meant that he had played in all 50 American states. This afternoon he plays a recital at the Kimmel Center's Verizon Hall that will include music by Felix Mendelssohn, J.S. Bach, César Franck, and the Philadelphia premiere of Reverie by his friend and colleague at Juilliard, Wayne O'Quinn. Typically when a pianist comes to play a recital in the big hall here at the Kimmel Center, they will wheel out several instruments for them. You know, several Steinways will appear on the stage and they'll be allowed to select from them. That's not the case with you. You are dependent on the instrument that's there. You've been working on it. How is it sounding?
Oh, my goodness. This instrument here at Verizon is a world-class instrument, and I think it's going to suit the program particularly well today.
You are dependent on the instrument you're given. How much preparation do you need to learn an instrument?
Quite a bit more, I suppose. In a way, it's like reinventing the wheel. Every time an organist goes to perform, we have to spend usually a full day or more registering the instrument. That's a process where we select the various stops available on an instrument and preset them on buttons or pistons. And that can take a whole day. It's a very personal art form because no two organists will sound alike, even if they play the same piece of music.
And is it like getting into a car? Is the gear lever in the same place? Is the steering wheel in the same place on all organs?
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, there's quite a bit of variety. Some pedal boards, for instance, are flat, and some are concave and radiating. There's a curve to them. There are a different number of keyboards or manuals, small instruments, large instruments, all of these sorts of things that we organists have to be flexible with. In fact, we probably have to be the most flexible of all musicians.
You have two options here in terms of the control surface for the instrument. You have the mechanical console directly under the pipes, and you also have an electric, radio-controlled console that can be moved around the stage. Which of these are you using? Are you using both?
There are two consoles, the mechanical action and the electric console. It's not officially electric or radio console, but it does employ a little more electricity. And I'm going to use the stage console, the electric console.
And why?
Well, I get a better sense of balance when I'm registering the instrument, and it's closer to the audience, so there's more of an intimacy there as opposed to being up in the heavens.
Give us a sense of the program you're playing. Music composed by composers who were organists. Is there a major difference when you're playing something by somebody who knows the instrument well and those who don't?
Often there is, but great composers of the past routinely made an effort to study the instrument, that is to say, to play it and to write for it. Well, of course, arguably the greatest composer in history, Bach, was an organist and understood organ construction and everything about the instrument. And these days, composers, I think, many of them are mystified. Unless they play the instrument, they don't write for it. Fortunately, on my program, I will be premiering a work by a friend of mine, Wayne O'Quinn. And Wayne told me that this was perhaps the most difficult undertaking musically of his life, composing for this instrument, which was initially daunting. But as he spent time with it, like anything, it becomes a friend and you eventually grow to love it.
Aside from the concert harp, the organ is probably the only instrument where you are playing with all four limbs. I mean, clearly you affect dynamics with the pedals on a piano, but you are producing sound with all four limbs. You mentioned Bach having an understanding, and indeed Mendelssohn, I think, also was an organist. Because they understood the mechanics of playing the instrument, they wrote a lot of very complicated stuff.
Oh, yes, they did indeed. They pressed the limits, I think, of the technique and, in some cases, the instruments themselves. Mendelssohn was a virtuoso organist, we know. And many people who love Mendelssohn don't know his organ music, so we'll see what they think today about his organ sonata.
Final point here. Anyone else coming in here to give a recital would, depending on ticket sales, have the option of playing in either the small or the large hall. You've got to fill the big hall because that's where the instrument is. Is that ever very daunting, the fact that you're always having to try and sell a couple of thousand seats rather than 500 or 600?
Well, I suppose it is. It's always daunting to get an audience for anything today. There's so many things to do. But you hope that people will become sensitive to beauty and life and want live music as opposed to sitting on the couch watching television. I hope to make this program not only entertaining, but I want to leave the audience better on the other side of it.
And there is a big organ audience here in Philadelphia. Well, clearly, you're playing in the big hall. How is the Philadelphia organ audience, if we can subcategorize them like that?
Oh, I think Philadelphia is quite a rich city when it comes to organ music and instruments. You have the Wanamaker, of course, you have this instrument, and many others. So I'm anticipating a really beautiful audience today.
Organist Paul Jacobs, he plays a recital this afternoon at 3 at the Kimmel Center's Verizon Hall.
You're listening to Creatively Speaking on WRTI.
WRTI's Susan Lewis traveled to China late last week to join the Philadelphia Orchestra on the final leg of its 2010 Asia tour. On Monday, she filed the first of 5 daily Notes from the Road features from Beijing. These reports were underwritten by Westchester University of Pennsylvania's College of Visual and Performing Arts. Over the course of the week, she reported on the orchestra's activities in and outside of the concert hall. She began her reports by catching up on what had happened previously on the tour.
2 weeks into the tour, the orchestra had gone to several places where it had never before performed, including the cities of Gumi and Shanwan in South Korea, where concertmaster David Kim says many people, nevertheless, know the sound of the orchestra.
These cities are full of music lovers who revere the Philadelphia Orchestra, who have grown up listening to recordings with the Ormond from the Ormond era. It is a great thrill for them to see us appear in their city. And then on another level, I think it's really important for us, the orchestra, to appear all over the world, to continue to play. It's great for us. We appear in different halls before tremendously enthusiastic audiences. It's a great morale booster for us. We consider it a great privilege and an important part of the job to represent the city and the Commonwealth all over the world.
The orchestra had played numerous times in Beijing, where it arrived on Sunday. China's capital since the early 1400s has neighborhoods that are centuries old, known as hutongs, along with gleaming skyscrapers and a sense of continual growth, says cellist John Cohen.
Last time, 2 years ago, I did manage to take a little tour of a hutong on sort of a bike taxi that maneuvered through the narrow streets by people doing their washing and little neighborhood restaurants in the middle of this incredibly huge metropolis that, even coming every 2 years, it seems to change so much.
The venue for the orchestra's concerts in Beijing, the National Center for the Performing Arts, is just 2.5 years old. Monday, the musicians had a day off. Cellists Kathy Reed and Ulrich Buchhaler both visited the Emperor's Summer Palace.
And we were at the Summer Palace for about 3 hours and walked all the way around the lake and then climbed up to the Buddhist temple at the top of the hill and then came down and took a boat across the lake back to where we were. It was wonderful, just absolutely great.
I met with an old Chinese teacher of mine that had Chinese lessons online for years, and yes. I, for the first time, met her in person. So I had a local tour guide. Ni hao, da jia hao. Wo hen si huan shuo zhong wen. Wo de zhong wen yue lai yue hao, yue lai yue liao li.
What does that mean?
My Chinese is getting more and more fluent.
Meanwhile, the National Center for the Performing Arts paid tribute to Charles Dutoit, who made hand impressions for the center's archives. Philadelphia Orchestra President Allison Volgamore says the ceremony reflected great admiration for the ensemble's chief conductor.
Charles has been a well-known figure here in China since the early, actually, 1970s, and he's made very frequent visits with the Montreal Symphony, and he has a great pride in having made a tour of the country.
Monday evening, Pennsylvania tourism officials hosted a reception to promote Philadelphia, with music provided by orchestra musicians. The Moon Quartet, including Marvin Moon, Yumi Kendall, Dan Hahn, and Mark Rivetti, played for a variety of receptions where attendees ranged from students to dignitaries. On Tuesday afternoon, the quartet performed at the U.S. Embassy at an afternoon garden reception. Tuesday evening's orchestra concert at the National Center for the Performing Arts featured Rachmaninoff's symphonic dances and the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto. Soloist Arabella Steinbacher says playing with the orchestra last summer at Saratoga was the start of a now blossoming relationship.
It definitely changed the feeling on stage when you feel that people are really supporting you, so not only musically but also just personally. And yeah, I can feel that really very much. Also, the sound is just so unique, it's so warm, and I feel really embraced by their sound when I play with them.
On Wednesday, bass trombone Blair Bollinger gave a masterclass at the Beijing Central Conservatory. While there was a translator, in classes for musicians who speak another language, Bollinger relies more on the music and his own body language than on words.
The best thing is monkey see, monkey do. You play, and okay, and then you point, now it's your turn, you do this. A lot of hand signals and lots of communication that doesn't involve words.
In its final concert in Beijing, the orchestra played both Stravinsky's Firebird and the seminal Rite of Spring. Chief conductor Charles Dutoit says the Rite of Spring's first performance in Paris in 1913 was a pivotal moment in Western classical music.
People were educated in the romantic repertoire, and here comes Stravinsky, and very difficult rhythms that Western people didn't know.
The warm reception the orchestra is receiving here demonstrates the strength of its long-standing relationship with China. Violinist Harold Klein was here for its historic first visit in 1973, when musicians toured the Great Wall and other sites.
We were fortunate, I think, to have seen them before the oceans of tourists were there to flood the scenery, if you'll excuse the expression.
On Thursday, the orchestra flew to Shanghai, hometown of principal cellist Hai Ye Ni.
I'm looking forward to see my old friends, and I feel that I can introduce my colleagues to a place I love so much.
On Friday, the orchestra played at the new Expo Culture Center. The orchestra brought its own audio engineer to make sure the ensemble could be heard in the large venue. But playing before an international audience in China was a great opportunity, says orchestra president Allison Volgamore.
For the Philadelphia Orchestra to be back by invitation to the World Expo after 37 years of relationships with China is a tremendous honor. And to do a program of American music as a part of our cultural exchange is tremendously exciting for us.
The program showcased the music of Bernstein, Gershwin, and Copland, along with Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture. Pianist Stuart Goodyear played Rhapsody in Blue, which he says recalls a moment in American history, but is also timeless.
You feel yourself in 1924, but at the same time, this piece has such power that no matter what year it is performed in, it still has that excitement, that exuberance.
Tonight, the orchestra will play its final concert of the tour at the Shanghai Oriental Arts Center before flying home to Philadelphia tomorrow.
WRTI's Susan Lewis. Notes from the Road was underwritten by Westchester University of Pennsylvania's College of Visual and Performing Arts. And our thanks go to the college's dean, Dr. Timothy Blair, for his very kind support. Apart from the glittering halls of Tokyo, Beijing and Shanghai, the Philadelphia Orchestra's 2010 Tour of Asia had a lower-key, smaller-scale concert heard by only a few dozen people in the remote Sichuan province village of Dujiangyan. A school destroyed in the 2008 earthquake there was recently rebuilt, with its music room dedicated to the people who partially financed it, the Philadelphia Orchestra. When the orchestra was last in China, that earthquake had happened only weeks before. Orchestra violinist Phil Cates gave more than money. He travelled to the devastated region only 10 kilometres from the epicentre to play impromptu concerts for displaced children in villages and hospitals. On Monday, he was back for the classroom dedication, playing Brahms and Telemann for the kids. The kids returned the favour with music of their own. The Philadelphia Inquirer's David Patrick Stearns travelled with Cates and three of his colleagues and now files this report from rural China.
Phil Cates looks like a man who's going fishing. He has that I'm playing hooky glint in his eye, has a backpack full of supplies, and a plane ticket for remote freshwater environs. But what looks like a fishing pole is actually his violin bow. He's looking for kids who want to hear music. The trip is a big diversion from the Philadelphia Orchestra tour, 6 hours by plane and car each way, in a country where travel is full of surprises. But the Cates attitude is, what's the worst that can happen? Well, what's the worst that has happened? Almost every tour has Cates quixotically traveling apart from the orchestra, often to music-deprived schools in remote places. In fact, Philadelphia Orchestra tour lore is full of Phil Cates cliffhangers. But talking to him at the Beijing airport, it seems that what's a cliffhanger for some people isn't for him.
I can't remember any worse that's happened. It's just somebody said no to me once.
Now, what about that blizzard in the Andes Mountains?
So I flew from Buenos Aires to Mendoza, which is on the west coast of Argentina, and then took a little bus. They call it Propuesto. It's like a van service across the Andes. And it was a gorgeous trip. But the road was closed for a couple hours at the pass, you know, at the top, just to wait for the roads to be safe to drive down the other side.
Such trips aren't easy to fit in between a fairly full schedule of regular concerts on the Philadelphia Orchestra's tour. After flying into the provincial capital of Chengdu on Sunday night, violinists Cates and Paul Roby, tuba player Carol Yanch, and percussionist Don Liuzzi needed a late-night hotel room rehearsal for the next morning's program in a village that was a two-hour drive further into the Chinese hinterlands. The joke among the punchy musicians was, how can you read my mind when I don't know what's in it? Music is important. They are, after all, representing the Philadelphia Orchestra. But Cates isn't about converting kids to classical music necessarily. When he went to the region 2 years ago, defying a ban against all foreigners from the earthquake site, he knew that music was only a vehicle for something bigger, a connection with another person, particularly persons in hospitals.
I mean, I think I could have been playing, you know, the same note 100 different times, just the fact that, you know, I was there. And that I was, you know, making eye contact with them and smiling. And just the delight on the children's faces, you know, that were legs in casts, missing limbs, you know, all kinds of things. You know, just to see them respond when they otherwise, you know, when you walk into the room, they're just lying there kind of really not caring.
Cates has been doing this sort of thing since the age of 10 or so, when his father was principal of the inner city Morrison Elementary School. Henry Cates often played his own violin for the students and began insisting that young Phil join him. They had a whole routine worked out in which Phil would come out of the audience by surprise and join his dad on stage. Now, there's no shtick, and a few Philadelphia Orchestra musicians in tow, such as Paul Roby, who admits he wouldn't have the courage to do this on his own.
I love the sense of independence, of going somewhere no one's ever gone before. And when I'm with Phil or Don, that's always a possibility. It's just fun.
Upon arriving, they were all outfitted with red scarves. It's a Communist Party thing. And toured the school with one of the English teachers, Pang Dongshen, whose wife and baby survived the earthquake, as well as 20 days of living under a makeshift shelter consisting of a blanket thrown over ropes tied between two trees. That's almost impossible to imagine as he now walks through the freshly polished hallways of the new school.
This building is much bigger, of course, and the materials, teaching materials, is improved. It's much more modern. I used to just use my chalk and teach students, and just some recorder, tape recorder. But now I have a TV, so I can make some pictures. So I think they are learning very efficiently.
They learned rather uproariously on Monday. Though the Philadelphia Orchestra Project Cope classroom is a serious place, lined with the likenesses of Mozart, Beethoven, and retired music director Wolfgang Sawallisch, Cates loves to walk around the school-age audience, encouraging kids to pluck his violin on cue. Carol Yanch showed everybody one of the bigger musical instruments they're likely to have ever seen. In response, the kids met them more than halfway, recalls Paul Roby.
Today was so much fun to play for the children. They were so eager to be with us and hear us. That's what made it so much fun.
When signing the guest book before leaving, percussionist Liu Zi drew a caricature of himself with two timpani, and Cates came up with a calligraphy-style treble clef and heart. Clearly, these concerts are best performed by those who, like Cates, can't not do them and get back much, much more than they give.
The Philadelphia Inquirer's David Patrick Stearns. He writes about the final days of the Philadelphia Orchestra's tour in tomorrow's paper. The grand final of a newly established competition for young classical musicians takes place this afternoon in West Philadelphia. The Young Classical Music Idol competition is the brainchild of Nellie Berman, who runs her own music school on the Main Line. Idol aims to drum up friendly competition amongst aspiring teen and preteen musicians from around the region and beyond. When Nellie Berman started her school in 1983, she was the sole instructor for 7 students. Since then, it has blossomed into an institution with more than 400 students and a faculty of over 40, drawn from conservatories across the US and Europe. No stranger to playing at a young age, Berman herself was enrolled in a conservatory in her native Russia at age 10. When she arrived in the U.S. in 1976, she hoped to find a future which would allow her to share her love of music with others, but found that classical music was, by comparison with her homeland, underappreciated and undertaught. Berman says the idea for this new competition came from her own pedagogical philosophy and her almost 50 years as a music educator.
When I came to this country, I was quite surprised what a low priority classical music is for many families. And in the same time, we see quite a lot of people, especially in old age, not young age. If you look at the audience of Philadelphia Orchestra, it's old age. And young people have sports in their life. This is their major thing that they're doing. Sport, computers, games, not reading so much, not music so much. And this competition is result of many years of me trying to teach classical music on a little bit higher level. For this, we started non-for-profit institution. We give scholarships to around 30 students every year.
What's different about the way you teach? You say teach classical music on a higher level. You're talking about the amount of time you spend teaching them, because by comparison with where you're from, Russia, typically kids have 2-hour lessons, longer even, and here it's what, 40 minutes or an hour?
Now it's 30 minutes or 45, the most, usually, and once a week. We teach two times a week, and not everybody does this in my school, but I have a little girl who started with me at age 5, and now she's 7, and she plays serious music by Mozart, Beethoven, Chopin. I spend with her 2 hours sitting.
You've spent the last 25, 30 years teaching classical music on this sort of more intense level. Where did the idea for the competition come from?
Each Saturday, for the past, I would say, 4 or 5 years, we have a classical performance class, we call this. Kids can come and perform. They don't have to be ready. They are encouraged then to memorize, but they can come and play. And the way how it goes, that they criticize themselves. They say, technically it's very good, musically it should be improved, right hand should be louder, left hand should be softer.
And this is the kids talking to each other.
Kids talking to each other. And it's incredibly charming, incredibly charming, and very helpful to them to know that they can bring their own opinion. I only navigate them. I don't bring my own opinions into this. In some way, it's competition. And I see results of this, that more and more people want to come to these performing classes. And competition is a big part of classical music as a rule. But usually the competitions are on a very high level, on the level of universities, grown-up kids. My idea is that the way how these competitions set up, that everybody will enjoy this.
Let's talk about the categories that are involved in this. Is it divided by instrument, by age, or both? How have you divided it?
By age. It's 4 categories, and they compete in between categories until they come to the finals. At the finals, they compete against each other.
So you could have, theoretically, a 7-year-old in the final competing against a 15-year-old.
Yes.
Competition is a very important part of the musician's life as they go forward in their career, because clearly, not just about winning competitions, they have to win auditions.
All right.
Do you feel this is going to be a good preparation for those who might, perhaps going forward, want to pursue a professional career?
I think that it could encourage them to pursue professional career. Music, real competition has to bring a little bit humility, a little bit that I don't have to consider myself the best. And I do this not for competing. I do this for loving, for love towards music. And what is great, what I see in my school, that I see that kids practicing much more.
Right. It gives them a focus.
The goal. It's goal-oriented.
Right.
And this is always good. It teaches them they want something. They work for this. The main goal is to make it to believe that he or she is good and can do this.
Nellie Berman, creator of the Young Classical Music Idol Competition and Festival. The grand final of the competition takes place this afternoon at 2 at the Zellerbach Theatre on Penn's campus. And that's our programme for this week. You can find an archive of past shows and subscribe to our podcast at our website, wrti.org. Creatively Speaking's theme music is by Bill Jolly, orchestrated by Tim Ribchester, and performed by Symphony in C under their music director, Rossin Milanoff. The programme's associate producer is Eric Brannan. Our executive producer is Jack Moore, and I'm Jim Cotter.
Creatively Speaking is a production of WRTI in Philadelphia. Support for the program comes from the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts and the listeners of WRTI.